Have you noticed the change in the climate? Global warming has become undeniable in recent years, and if you haven't yet been impacted personally, you almost certainly will be soon. Many communities around the country and the world have already been affected dramatically, as you'll hear in these big ideas from Before It's Gone, stories from the front lines of climate change in small town America by Jonathan Vigliotti. Jonathan is a correspondent for CBS News, and his work has received an Emmy and Edward R. Murrow Award. Here he is to share five key insights from his first book.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Vigliotti, the author of Before It's Gone, Stories from the Frontlines of Climate Change in Small Town America. Writing this book, for me, was a journey that began as a kid growing up in the 90s in Mount Kisco, New York. If you were to go and knock on the door of the Blue House on Meadowbrook Lane and ask my mother back then where I was, she would likely tell you I was somewhere in the nearby woods. This is where I first fell in love with nature, and where, when a housing development was proposed in those same woods, I discovered just how fragile our natural world was. Today, as a national correspondent for CBS News, reporting on the environment and covering extreme weather, I've seen firsthand how the destruction of our habitat and the warming of our climate through our burning of fossil fuels have led to catastrophic disasters never before recorded on Earth. The combined effects of habitat and climate change are like a candle lit on both ends, snuffing out more and more American main streets every year. What I've witnessed in the field, often from the eye of the storm, and the scientists, survivors, and local leaders I've met along the way, are the focus of my book. Here are five key insights I've gathered from the field. Number one, storms have names, and so do their survivors, who have lessons to share. The sheer scale of today's megastorms, and the billions of dollars in damage they now often cause, make it easy to lose sight of the growing number of Americans living on the climate front lines. We've all heard of Hurricane Katrina, Andrew, and Irma, but what about Becky James and Kevin Reed? They're just a few of the hundreds of survivors I've spoken to out in the field. I met them both after a mile-wide tornado meteorologists called The Beast ripped through their slice of Kentucky bluegrass in 2021. Kevin was a 47-year-old soft-spoken motorcycle mechanic living in Mayfield. Becky was the 74-year-old steel magnolia that owned a diner in nearby Dawson Springs. Kevin and Becky didn't know each other. Their lives had never been diagrammed, but on the balmy winter night of December 10th, 2021, the burnished edges of their southern worlds, along with those of tens of thousands of other strangers, overlapped and were then welded together by just 3 minutes of chaos, the time it took for the beast to pass over. According to studies, one in three Americans have been impacted by extreme weather, and in the future, more American strangers will likely be connected by disaster. But what if by listening to the stories of survivors, what they would do differently, and how they recovered and rebuilt, those of us who have been untouched could avoid a similar fate? It's not a crazy idea. Just look at all the anti-smoking campaigns, often featuring people in some stage of suffering, warning the rest of us not to pick up a cigarette. In New York City, a study by the health department found for every dollar spent on its campaign, the city saved $32 in healthcare costs. I recently listened to a TED Talk by Harvard psychologist Dan Gilbert, who explained how the human brain has this unique ability over every other animal in the kingdom to help its users to imagine experiences before they happen. It's an evolutionary skill meant to protect us from doing stupid things based on stories from friends, family, ancestors, and yes, strangers. But when dealing with the often abstract threat of an environmental disaster, it seems like many of us have switched this part of the brain off, as we'll discuss more in a few minutes. I believe listening to stories like Becky and Kevin's and understanding their perspectives, otherwise known as empathizing, is the first step to turning the natural defenses in our brains back on. We must remember the storms and their victims and listen and take action. Number two. Before every environmental disaster, there is a scientist who's been ignored. We have a long history of being terrible listeners. Scientists have been warning about the impacts of climate change since the 1800s, when the Western world was revolutionized by the invention of fossil fuel burning, CO2 spewing industrial machines. In 1856, amateur scientist Eunice Foote determined an atmosphere with CO2 would give our Earth a high temperature. Each CO2 molecule in the air, she determined, essentially acted like the glass pane of a greenhouse, allowing sunlight through but trapping this heat and threatening all life inside. Sound familiar? Her warnings back then went unheeded. In 1968, as our atmosphere was rapidly warming like Foote predicted, glaciologist John Mercer discovered the planet's ice sheets were thinning and warned that parts of western Antarctica would melt in 50 years, leading to sea level rise if nothing was done to reduce CO2. His warnings also went unheeded, and as he predicted, severe cracks were discovered in the Thwaites Glacier in 2021. This pattern of scientific prediction, followed by public apathy, followed by scientific prediction coming true, continues today. But the deadly consequences of inaction are no longer decades in the future. As I've seen and reported, scientific predictions ignored today can become self-fulfilling prophecies tomorrow. Lahaina, on the Hawaiian island of Maui, is a perfect example. In 2014, a group of scientists warned that the region's warming air was causing drought and increasing the threat of deadly wildfires. This report was filed away and essentially ignored by local and state politicians. On August 9, 2023, I witnessed the deadly consequences when I arrived on the cindered shoreline of what was left. 80% of Lahaina was destroyed, and at least 101 people were killed in what became the deadliest wildfire in modern American history. As I surveyed what was left of historic Front Street, I struggled to breathe and had to stop and chug water to rinse my mouth of this metallic taste, the flavor of homes, businesses, cars, and much worse, scorched to ash and inhaled through my nose. While officials described the fire as a bomb going off, implying there was no time to act, the reality is there was a nearly decade-long fuse that could have been extinguished, but instead was ignored. We can no longer afford to not listen. The era of Mother Nature's revenge has arrived. Number 3. Carbon karma is coming back around with a vengeance. Earth, and the disparate communities that rise from it, is connected by the same atmosphere. This air we all share has become radicalized since the Western world's Industrial Revolution. While wealthy nations, what we call the developed slices of the globe, have disproportionately contributed to the climate crisis, they've largely been able to fend off the impacts much better than the poorer, developing ones. Just look at the United States. Our unrivaled industry, infrastructure, and engineering have shielded most of us from the elements we've radicalized, giving us a false sense of security. But this carbon karma is catching up as Mother Nature outmaneuvers America's modern tools designed to hold her back. I've seen this while covering every kind of disaster, from tornadoes and hurricanes to wildfires. Fire has always been a natural part of California's landscape. Centuries ago, thousands of small fires, usually sparked by lightning, slowly burned each season as a critical component of forest ecology. The flames removed dead plants to make room for new, healthier ones. But in the early 1900s, the National Forest Service established the first group of wildland firefighters whose job it was to quickly suppress fire. These efforts were successful early on, and from these woods, new towns were built on top of what once was a seasonal tinderbox. But the development of California's woods reflected the boom in development across the country. As America's growing population released more greenhouse gases into the air, warming the planet and fueling droughts, over time, those wildland firefighters and all their tools struggled to stop fire. And because of our warming climate and how we altered the habitat by allowing dead vegetation to pile up, when a fire started, it quickly grew into a monster. Data from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, highlights the evolution of our man-made fire crisis. In 1980, the agency responded to just 3 wildfires. In 2020, they responded to 83. The growing number of major hurricanes in states like Florida tell the same story of humans losing their grip. FEMA responded to 1 hurricane in 1980. In 2020, they responded to 30. The cost of these disasters also gives some perspective. In 1980, there were 3 storms that each caused more than $1 billion in damage, adjusted for inflation. In 2020, there were 20 storms that individually cost more than $1 billion in damage. Number 4. A false sense of security has led Americans to take more risks. A number of factors play into the cost of today's storms. Research shows our warming atmosphere is heating up our oceans, which, like a tea kettle, are releasing more moisture into the air, which in return fuels the rapid growth of tropical storms into monsters named Harvey, Maria, and Irma. The other contributor to the cost of a storm is something perhaps even more troubling. More people are choosing to move into riskier areas despite the threats. According to risk mitigation firm Aon, in the last four decades, the population in counties along the Gulf and East Coast grew on average by about 160 people per square mile compared to 26 people per square mile in communities further away from the water. It's the equivalent of watching one of those anti-smoking commercials and deciding to start chain smoking. The federal government, which provides flood insurance for most American homes and regulates where and how people build, has been complicit in this trend. The National Flood Insurance Program, overseen by FEMA, is responsible for mapping the nation's flood zones and then establishing insurance premiums that reflect the real risk based on their findings, except many homes don't come with accurate warning labels on their package. The problem, FEMA's findings are only based on previous cases of flooding. The program does not take into account future projections based on science. This means many people are moving into homes unaware of the looming threat. According to FEMA, 40% of flood insurance claims between 2015 and 2019 were from people living in areas not considered high risk. FEMA is in the process of updating its flood maps, but those updated maps still do not factor in climate change forecasts, meaning more people are unknowingly building homes directly in harm's way. Number five, fixing our climate will take decades. Fixing our habitat will buy us time. So how do we reverse the impact of our radicalized weather and save our communities? Scientists haven't only been warning us about looming disaster for nearly two centuries, they've also been prescribing us medicine that we haven't been taking. Reducing our greenhouse gas emissions is drug number one, but because Earth is connected by the same atmosphere, meaning what's put into the air by China or America or India impacts all life on Earth, this drug requires international approval, which hasn't been easy. And even if every nation cut all emissions today, it will take decades to see a positive impact on our climate. Sticking with this drug analogy, it's just like how aspirin doesn't immediately cure a headache. Fortunately, there's another remedy that has near immediate effect and only requires individual communities to swallow, returning our habitats, our towns, back to a more natural state. Scientists have found that healthy habitats are more resistant to the impacts of extreme weather. Remember that 2014 wildfire study in Lahaina? The one local leaders didn't implement? That report wasn't just a warning. The same scientists suggested measures to prevent disaster, including restoring wetlands and reducing dry vegetation killed by drought. The federal government would even help fund those mitigation efforts. While the local government didn't follow doctor's orders, one resident did listen, making those changes to their property, including removing dead vegetation and clearing plants that were too close to the house, what's known as creating defensible space. The home with the red roof, as it's now called, was one of the only buildings to survive in a miles-long stretch of destruction that I walked through. Until climate scientists, our planet's doctors, are listened to and their prescribed changes are made, another fuse in another American town will be lit, and it's anyone's guess when time will run out. We still have the power to act, and we must, before it's gone. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll pick up my book.
Thank you, Jonathan. That was five big ideas from Before It's Gone, Stories from the Front Lines of Climate Change in Small Town America by Jonathan Vigliotti. You might also like our book bite for How to Prepare for Climate Change, A Practical Guide to Surviving the Chaos by David Pogue. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.